Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Brainstorm Brewery. This is Jason trying to sound like Marcel. Pretend you didn't notice the difference.
Never works.
No. God. You gotta be like, you gotta do it like this. You gotta be like, welcome everyone to another butt crack filled episode of Brainstorm Brewery.
The DCI has cracked down on bullying.
Is a butt crack if it's filled?
They got a crack team over at the DCI. And they're really cracking down on bullying and, some dude's ass.
Yeah, well, before we get into that tough cookie right there, we've got to introduce our guests. We got the esteemed Scott. Most people probably like, Scott, who's Scott? Well, if you dig a little deeper to this guy, his name's known on Twitter as The Booze Cube.
Can we not say dig a little deeper when we're talking about butt cracks?
I'm not talking about his butt crack, I hope not.
Yeah, my pants usually fit.
Even for as much as you drink.
I mean, sometimes they may fall down or I may take them off, but usually not at tournament. At least that I remember.
All right. I like to sag my pants, so I get told all the time from my coworkers that I need to pull my pants up. So, you know, I know the value of having your pants high and not having your boxers in front of everyone.
Yeah, I need to pull my pants up at work, too, mostly because I work at home and they're usually around my ankles. So I don't know why. That's not even comfortable. It's in the winter. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So, Scott, tell everyone who you are. If people don't know, we'll just break this down. Some people probably don't know about the Booze Cube. You've probably been stuck underneath a rock or something. Or that. I don't know, maybe the student to this podcast or you didn't listen last year when we got down with the Booze Cube and we tried to help with the community expansion. Or when we went to Vegas and there was a Booze Cube championship. That we're gonna have the same thing here at GP Montreal coming up. It should be here. We should be in Montreal when you hear this cast. But Booze Cube is basically a game. He created a subdivision of Magic where he created these own cards that have drinking centric theme to it. So there's something like say Booze Touch where if you get attacked and you get hit then you gotta take a drink. And there's ways to pay costs for you know taking drinks in terms of mana, like Phyrexian mana. So there's different mechanics revolving around drinking, having fun, making a social game, and it's a blast to play, and, you know, you get blasted when you play. So this game is infamous, and, you know, it's quite fun to play with, so this is Scott himself. You want to tell us about, you know, the Booze Cube, where you started with, and something in that area?
So, basically, I started out a number of years ago trying to turn Magic into a drinking game with one of my buddies, and we just played with old decks, and we figured instead of life totals, we would just drink whenever we took damage. And it ended up really being terrible, because there was no motivation to block, it wasn't a game. And so, we ended up just saying, fuck it, and going out to the bars. So, fast forward a number of years, I download Magic Set Editor, and just start fucking around, and I create a few cards that ended up in the Booze Cube, but the turning point was my created Phyrexian Frat House, which just had drink one as a cost to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. And I realized that the problem with the original drinking game that we had tried to do was that it really wasn't a game. If you take Magic and make drinking as a, try to explore the design space of drinking as a mechanic, there's just so much you can do. And all of the colors can really approach drinking in a different way, like black drinks for power, white being the color of order and conformity and symmetrical effects has a lot of group drink. Blue wants to be the smartest guy in the room, so if it gets its opponent drunk, then it's relatively smarter and so on. And so I've just created over the last couple of years the version that I just released has about 427 cards, and draft it and drink and have fun.
It is fun, by the way. This is like the third or fourth time we've talked about the Booze Cube on the podcast, but the first time we've explained it. which, that's how, kind of how we roll here at Brainstorm Brewery. I didn't say that to make everybody sad. Everyone's kind of like...
Still, we're sad because we know how little sleep we're going to be getting this weekend and how pressed for time we're already going to be. We're recording this podcast at, what, T-minus 12 hours or so from the time we're going to be taking off to go pick Marcel up?
That is correct. For yes. those that don't know, because this is the first time they've ever listened to this podcast, this is the weekend of GP Montreal, which is going to be one of the social events of the season, and we are very excited.
Yes, indeed. I'm expecting, you know, lots of snow. I'm going to be coming bundled up with snow boots, long underwear, snow hat, overcoats, and everything.
I'll be wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and Marcel's going to feel ridiculous.
Hey, as California, it's, you know, I'm dealing with 70-degree weather out here right now. It was beautiful. I got sunburned yesterday because it was so nice.
Well, I'll tell you, I used to work for a clothing company called Stylin' Online that went to different comic book conventions and sold stuff. And I will tell you, we sold more hooded sweatshirts in Florida in the middle of July than we did in Michigan in the middle of the winter. So it gets around 70 degrees at night in California and those people like start to bundle up. So I could definitely see Marcel not even able to handle snow.
Yeah, I'll be all right. It's going to be fun because I'm going to be warm because I'm going to be so drunk from playing Booze Cube on the drunk train. If people don't know, we're going to have GP, Booze Cube, Drunk Train action going. We're going to do our preliminaries there. We're going to have a Booze Cube champion, the Champio. We got the mat printed out. Shout out to Proxy Guy. He designed the mat and the logo for the GP Montreal Drunk Train. So, yeah, we're going to be on the train. Basically, I'm flying into Detroit. There, that's where Jason, you know, Ryan, they live over there in Michigan, go pick me up. And then we're going to drive to Toronto. We're going to hang out with Rye ABC, stay at his house overnight, and then we're going to jump on the train on Friday with the A-Team, with Maddie Studios, with Scotty, Jeremy Schofield, and a bunch of other people. And we're going to go from Toronto to Montreal on the train. We're going to do a 4 or 5 hour trip there. We're going to Booze Cube, and then we're going to stumble off of the train and then go to some event, KYT. He has a beer, what is it called? Some beer place, a lounge. He's got that reserved. And in the midst of that, we're going to go to some exquisite restaurant and eat foie gras and some other exquisite pork. So, yep. It's going to be quite the life right there. Doing it big for GP Vegas.
So Jason, Vegas, are you going to...
What's that?
Oh, so are you going to hate draft? That's what she said this time around?
If we don't do the finals, 2-on-1, then it's totally a fair card.
Yeah, that's something that we can't have again. That 2-on-1 thing for the champions is too much, at least too much for error.
But I'm looking forward to playing the Booze Cube again. I think it's gonna get there. So what else do we want to talk about, fellas? There's a lot going on in Magical the Gathering card. Do we want to talk about Buttcrack Gate?
Jump right into it. Go ahead, tell us what happened.
Well, okay. At GP Richmond, one of the attendees saw a lot of exposed butt cracks, and he thought it would be funny to go around to all the exposed butt cracks and make a solemn rapper pose in the picture with the butt crack, and he put it up on Reddit. It made the front page of not the Magic, but actually the Funny subreddit. So for most people, since that's a default sub, it was on the, like, their very top page. So when they logged onto Reddit, that was the first thing they saw. And that's
it was actually on the main page. I was on the when I logged on, I was on the main page. It was the first post.
Well, yeah, because the Funny's a default sub, so like if you're not logged in, that's the first thing you see. So it got reposted on Kotaku. It was even on Time.com, which apparently Time.com is passing off Reddit link bait as a real article now. But so this got a lot of exposure, pun intended, and a lot of the people whose butts were exposed got a lot of exposure that they didn't necessarily want. So this was reminiscent of the whole Dr. Eight Sides thing from GP Indianapolis a few years ago when somebody took pictures of the attendees of GP Indianapolis without their knowledge and made captions making fun of them and, you know, received a ban for that. And we kind of talked about that when it happened. This is, you know, basically the same exact issue. So what do you guys think? I heard that the guy who posed for the pictures got a 6-month DCI ban. Basically for violating their bullying policy. What do you guys feel about that?
So, I mean, I guess my feeling on it is I don't agree with the fact that he got banned, but I don't agree with the fact that he got banned because he took pictures of people's ass crack. Like, no offense, if you're going to go to a tournament, pull it up. Like, some of those were You know, whenever you get a little bit of butt hanging out, it's fine, but like, I don't need to see down your ass crack. That's not okay. And, I mean, that's fine. Don't think he deserves a ban for that. I think he deserves the ban because he should have full well knowingly known going into this that he was going to get banned. So, I mean, you can't do that kind of thing if you're not expecting to get banned. I don't know. I don't personally think he deserves to, but you have to know he was going to. I mean, that was the first thing I said when somebody showed it to me was, well, he's getting banned. So there's no way going into it and taking that many pictures he didn't think about it. It's not like he took one picture and posted it and thought it was funny.
See, like, here's the deal. I thought it was funny, but at the same time, I don't like the kind of attitude that Ryan's espousing right now, which is sort of like, yeah, but those people should pull up their pants. It really sounds like victim blaming to me. Like, yeah, well, if she didn't want to get raped, she shouldn't have worn that skirt. Like, that's the argument I hear. That's absolutely
That's totally
what I
different. That's head. That's no yeah. different than if somebody walks by me and has bad BO, like, me not being able to be disgusted by it because they have bad BO. It's bad hygiene.
There's a difference. You're in the public sphere right here. Like, you know, I can understand, like, some people can't control certain things, certain aspects about them. And if you sit there and you make fun about, you know, something out of their control, like, you know, you're a fucked up person by doing that. That's where you shouldn't go. You know, that humor would cross the line. That's where Dr. Eight side, you know, he really went overboard and he got the 18-month ban because of that. This guy, you know, he should have done better maybe protecting the identity of the people. If he would have been closer up to the butt crack, just the bust cracks themselves, and you couldn't identify whose it was, unless you really know, you know, like, what shirt it was, then he would have probably been, you know, completely in the clear, and I don't think it would have been that wrong. But, you know, he's not shaming people. I mean, you don't see people's faces. It's hard to know that. So, like, I think he went overboard, but at the same time, mm-hmm. like, you know, people, what if you got a kid there? Kids looking at a butt crack, you know, they're sitting across from that, and you got a butt crack right in their face. Like, you know, people should, common decency, like, you should take a shower, you know, you should wear deodorant, and, you know, you should have your pants pulled up so your butt crack's not there. Wear a big enough shirt.
You can't enforce that by saying, oh, and, you know, by the way, the DCI condones publicly shaming these people if they don't pull their pants up.
Like, if they're going to start taking this kind of stuff more seriously and they're going to hand out bans for this, then I think if someone smells bad at a tournament and they go against that hygiene policy that is clearly stated in the same set of rules, that needs to also be enforced. People should be getting kicked out of tournaments for smelling bad, and they're not. They're smelling bad, showing your ass, wearing clothes that just don't fit. Like, there's a certain difference. Like, I'm not talking about the people who are, oh, man, that guy looks weird, kind of, you know, we have that magic stigma. Yeah, I understand the community can be judgmental and such, but there's a certain level of just looking okay to go out in public in general. I don't care what you're doing. There's just certain ways you should not dress, and it's not okay. And I don't think that's the way the game should be promoted.
And this is
I'm not saying that every person has to be, you know, blonde, blue-eyed, perfect human being or whatnot, but they have to be acceptable to be in public in general. Like, you, I don't know.
How reasonable that you didn't go full Hitler. That's a really reasonable.
Well, no, but I mean, that's where it sounds like everyone's trying to steer it towards is like anytime you say that it's not okay for someone to be something like that, that's the what you get stereotyped and saying. That's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't have to be. You know, I'm not trying to be an elitist about it, but I take a shower because I don't want to smell bad, because if I didn't shower, I would be conscious about it. And the people who aren't and are willing to go out in public like that need to have someone say, hey, look, man, you smell bad. Like, go take a shower.
See, there's also a way
going
about it.
We're not going to accomplish that by shaming the people.
No, I agree with you. Shaming is wrong. Shaming is the wrong way of going about it. Like, his method is bad, but at the same time, it's not completely out of the ordinary. This is done, you know, several decades ago. People get shamed in the newspapers. It's something that happens. It's not like this is not part of American society. Like, this does occur. He was wrong, but at the same time, it's not like he took a picture of their face, the front of their face, and, like, you know, put a name behind it. Like, you know, there's the people that are embarrassed, sure, they were in the picture, they're embarrassed, they had their ass cracked, but next time, you know, they're not gonna have their ass crack hanging out.
No, they're not gonna come to the fucking tournament. They're never gonna come to a tournament again.
No.
Absolutely. If even one person, cause it doesn't matter if nobody who saw those pictures recognized those asses except the 15 people pictured, doesn't matter. If one person says, oh my god, I'm never leaving the house again, because they're mortified because a picture of their ass is on TimeMagazine.com, that's bad for the game. Wizards doesn't want to have a policy where, oh, well, it's okay because he had it coming because of how he was dressed.
I'm not saying that it's okay.
It's fine to, but, like, you're acting like something good came out of this because at least people will be
so ashamed
of their ass crack that they'll...
It's not black and white. It's not black and white. it's multifaceted. The bad part is the way he went about it. The good part is us as Magic players, we're going to have now, regardless of whatever, the cat's out the bag, you're going to think about your personal appearance. You're not going to have your butt crack out there. Sure, some people ain't going to show up because of this. That's, you know, I'm sorry, that's bad. That's not the way that it should go down. That's not cool. You know, this is very wrong that had to happen. Two people's feelings got hurt, but they did. But now we as a community are going to move forward. We're going to do what we can not to have this there. Maybe someone's ass crack, that you go up to them, you know, politely say, hey, man, can you fix this so your ass crack's not hanging out? Maybe, you know, we might try to pick ourselves up as a community and maybe pick up, you know, maybe do a little bit better. So awareness for ourselves, you know, that's the good part about it. Sure, you know, like saying, we can't say, oh, it's not black and white. There's positives and negatives to everything that happened. You know, at the same time, now we get to look at this like, you know, we can't encourage this behavior. Like, you know, his intent wasn't to shame people. He was trying to be funny, but at the same time, he shamed people. So now, where can we go about, you know, trying to boost ourselves as a community in a positive way that we don't bring each other down? This is going to create a dialogue. You know, it wasn't as bad as Dr. A's side, and now we're seeing he's getting a 6-month ban. There's many sides. I mean, I'm glad that there's dialogue and people are talking, and it's not just, you know, one side and everything. And I do think he deserved the ban. I think 6 months is fair.
Yeah, I mean that's worst, really all I deserved wanted. He deserved the ban just for the fact that this just happened. I mean, just happened, and that guy got banned. Like, how can you expect not to get banned?
Yeah.
It also really makes the community as a whole look bad. People outside the community, like my Facebook feed, and was just cluttered with people that don't play Magic posting this, and that's. I mean, we already have enough of a stigma and stereotype as Magic players to begin with. This just reinforces that.
Yeah, and the comments were overwhelmingly stuff like, oh, this is exactly what I expected at a Magic tournament. And, like, the weak, feeble argument that Magic players had was like, well, Google Brian Kibler, he's pretty, so, Yeah, that was all we had. Google Brian Kibler.
But so, see, this is what they expected, so you're not breaking down anything. Like, this is, when they hear Dungeons & Dragons and Magic, they instantly going to think of something. Like, they automatically go to the steer of where their prejudice and their stereotypes of whatever they already have. So it's not like this is
giving them ammunition. Like, how many ass cracks do you think you'd see at a NASCAR race? But you don't see a picture of ass cracks at a NASCAR race plastered over the front of Otaku.
Well, it's up to you to prevent your ass from being public. So, Jason, what you can do next time is make sure you wear the white right pants, wear some suspenders, and you don't have your ass hanging out. If you see somebody else, tap them on the shoulder, tell them politely, you know, do something about that. And that's how you can go about it, and that's how we can make sure this doesn't happen again. So there you go.
I think the ban accomplishes that, too.
Yes, I think it does. I think we're right. Well, I think we're talking about this way too long. Wait.
Yeah.
And then ultimately, though, Booze Cube, you're a lawyer. People doesn't know this. You are a certified lawyer. How do you see about the legal ramifications about this or anything from that aspect? Let's hear what you got.
Well, I mean, I know this isn't exactly my area of expertise, but I do know you have a right to control your own likeness, which is why, you know, you always have to get release forms when you're going to show somebody's face. I don't know whether that applies to their ass crack. I suppose I'd have to research that, but I'm way too lazy.
What about J-Lo? I mean, she has a signature booty. You know, what if someone made a, like,
well, that would be a copyright infringement claim more than anything. No, like, see, Wizards gets around that by having a, you basically sign a release by walking into the event. You walk by a thing that says, hey, we reserve the right to use your likeness for promotional material. And, you know, basically by walking by that sign, you acknowledge that you are assenting to have your image being used for promotional material.
Well, and they do have it explicit in when you're signing up for the tournament. I forget if it's the deck registration form, but whatever the form you have to sign and give to the judges when you're either registering your deck or your seal pool, I mean, it's explicit, and they can do whatever they want with your likeness.
Sure. I mean, that doesn't really apply in this case, but...
Yeah.
So let's move into Picks of the Week.
Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week. Pick of the Week. Time for the Pick of the Week.
So Booze Cube, you want to start us off?
Sure.
Curveball.
So I guess my Pick of the Week is going to be Phyrexian Obliterator. I've been on this card for quite a while, and I've been on it in a... like for mono black for modern, which I do think will break out at some point, but now you have the green black rock deck that was actually, it was one of the last two undefeated decks at
GP Richmond. And if, you know, it's a small set, third set mythic that's already popular. I don't think it's going any lower. And I don't know how much higher it'll go. I think it could hit 50 by the end of modern season, given all the other spikes. And I don't know whether you want to tie up capital in it if you're speculating, but I think if you want your personal playset to play with, that it's not going to get any lower. And,
well, what's the upside if you're buying in after it spiked twice in the last few months?
I think it could still spike again. I mean, it spiked usually without seeing any play. Now it's actually seeing some tournament success.
I think it will need to see a lot more success before it even begins to justify the price it's at now. But, so you do see upside to buying in now?
I think it could be a $50 card.
Okay.
Wow, okay.
I mean, the card is powerful.
And it's a four of in the decks that play it, that's for sure.
It is.
I mean, the only issue I have with it, that being said, is I think you're going to be relying on those two. Like, it's not a universally powerful card. It's not something like Snapcaster where you're going to see it in a ton of decks over time. Like, if either one of those two decks die off, then you're looking at, you know, the one deck that's remaining, or if both of them happen to not have a great matchup against whatever the metagame is at that time, the card just completely falls off the radar, which is what keeps me from believing it has that far to grow. Like, I don't know that it'll necessarily drop. It certainly won't plummet. If it does drop, it'll be over gradual time, but I have a tough time seeing it getting 50.
I think it just depends on how much both the green-black rock takes off, and I do think that Mono Black has, or at least Black Devotion, which can still splash other colors. I mean, Gary dominates Standard, and it's not, he's even stronger in Modern.
Right, because you get stuff like Phyrexian Arena and, you know, all kind of good stuff you want to be playing in that deck.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I've Garyed somebody for 20 before.
See, I will give credit where it's due, Scott. I'm going to actually pretend that you came on our podcast before they printed all of Theros was spoiled, because you, as soon as you found out about Devotion, you were talking in the Quiet Speculation forums about Obliterator.
Oh yeah,
so you were ahead of this card. I don't know that it's a great pickup now, but you definitely made a lot of people money with this call. So credit where it's due.
Thanks.
All right, so I'll jump in with a snatch pick of the week, a
Hararel Rives. Is that
I'm
a joke
so
about
tired.
Riku? Because Riku looks Asian and he would say Hararel Rives.
Parallel Lies. Oh, Parallel Lies, right? As I say it? Parallel Lies. I'd say that right now. Parallel Lies.
That should be a Boost Cube card. You have to say Parallel Lives while you're drinking.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, you have some tongue twister.
Didn't we do that?
You got that?
Card Toy Boat already?
Yeah.
And then we did what? Smash Sally or?
Smash Sally, yeah.
Alright, yeah, Parallel Lives.
Part with the mechanic that was, you could cast it for free if an opponent slurred their speech, but it was hard to judge.
Yeah, because if you're so drunk, you think everything's slurred, and then whoever's the other side, then never think they slur it, no matter how drunk you are, you never think.
Oh, is that what it means by slurring your speech? See, I was having opponents cast that whenever I used the racial epithet.
Oh, Parallel Lies. On Moto, it's 7 cents. And
wow.
It's $6.50.
It's $6 to go up, like.
Sorry. It's $2.60 on paper. Oh man, I'm just horrible right now.
Six is probably where I want to sell. I don't know. I think it's probably, there's a lot of copies because it's in Innistrad and it's mostly played in one of format, but it's quite good. I mean, I think this was a pick of the week, one of ours at like a quarter or something like that. So, I mean, Parallel Lives, it's got upside forever. I have a big box of it.
I think long term, you might see $5, $6, $7 over time, slowly, gradually. It's not going to do anything crazy. But on Moto, 7 cents, like, yeah, there's room for that to just go somewhere.
Well, I mean, what's it going to get played on Moto? EDH? Is that a thing?
No. I don't know. I can't, EDH is just so horrible. I think eventually they might have multiplayer. They might be able to figure it out one day. But, I mean, 7 cents is the cheapest you can get the card. It's been fluctuating between that and 5 cents, so you could probably find it for five. I just think, you know, that's basically bulk rare. So if you invest, like, you know, get 20, 40, 50 of these or something, 100, at bulk rare, you're not spending, but like, a couple of dollars, and, like, this card has the potential to go somewhere, you know. So, like, putting some money in some bulk rares that just seem very, you know, high potential to it. This has a very high ceiling. It's already at the absolute floor. So I just think there's room. There's definitely room for that. And I mean, if there ever is a multiplayer, they ever do figure out, or they, you know, Moto doesn't crash all the time. They fire the team. You know, they get rid of Worth after 16 months of saying, yes, we're going to get, you know, these little aspects of Moto working and the trading working and this and that. And it's only going to be a couple months, and then 16 months later, there's still nothing, and they still got crashes. And they make this a game, and they figure out how to do multiplayer because, you know, they haven't even begun to start that. They got to figure out how to make Moto work. So they can't even think about how to make a cohesive multiplayer experience. So the odds of this card actually going up, now that you mentioned it, is very grim, because the way the Moto is, it's not going to happen.
Jesus. Sometimes I turn my pick of the week into another pick of the week. You turned yours into an angry, vitriolic rant, calling for Worth Wolpert's head and condemning Magic Online. It was beautiful.
And on that grim note, and speaking of Innistrad, I guess my pick of the week would be Stony Silence for this week. I mean, as long as Affinity / Birthing Pod / any amount of decks that run Artifacts and Modern continue to be popular, and, you know, Legacy and Vintage continue to be a thing, I think Stony Silence will continue to see play. The card's not getting any worse. Null Rod before it was $10 and has now pretty well been replaced by anything that can, you know, run this card over it. Meaning, you know, this card is nowhere to go but up from here. We're seeing a lot of these cards from Innistrad block. And I think Parallel Lives, honestly, even though you may not be sold on it, you know, and online, it's definitely a good pickup in paper. I was just talking about that in an article a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, I just covered that and talked about the new one, Primal Vigor, I believe it is. That came out in the Commander deck, the new doubling season. And I like any of those kind of cards. And so I definitely don't disagree with you. Don't talk yourself too far out of that one, Marcel. I would just concentrate on those in paper rather than online, maybe. But, I mean, yeah, back to Stony Silence. I think, you know, with Affinity being one of the big monsters this past weekend, we're probably going to see a lot more people starting to jam those in the sideboard. And you start, you know, seeing too many of them, and suddenly people look at the card and go, oh, why is this $1.50? You know, it's not like it's still in standard. This card's now 2 years, 2.5 years old. They're getting harder and harder to find. They may not be that hard to find yet, but it still doesn't mean that in a year from now, just like how we're seeing cards like Fastlands and stuff finally jump this year, we're going to see a lot of these kind of cards jump about this time next year, I imagine, if not before that point. And I think Stony Silence is probably about as low as it's ever going to go right now.
So yeah, the card's good. Like, it's under $1. So online, it's just about $1 as well. And it hoses a lot of different strategies. It's very versatile. This is what you want out of a good sideboard card for internal formats, because you can hose different decks with the same cards, so it gives you a lot of options. So yeah, I think you have a solid pick here.
Hey, sorry Scott, we didn't tell you that it was Innistrad block theme week. You picked a card from Scar's block. Sorry about that. Well, my pick's actually Grafdigger's Cage. What's that?
Well, I was gonna say, if I went with Innistrad, I'd go with Nevermore.
Okay. Yeah, that's very similar. Ryan picked a sideboard card in Stony Silence. I actually like Grafdigger's Cage. I like Grafdigger's Cage more than I like Stony Silence. Grafdigger's Cage currently in paper is near its all-time low. It's about like $1.89. You can get them for like $2 shipping included on TCG Player. But if you look online, it's actually at its all-time high in line. It's about 3.7 ticks. So I think with modern stuff going insane, Grafdigger's Cage is great if the Storm deck takes off like everybody expects it to. Like, how can people say that they think, like, you know, Pyromancer's Ascension can go from $2 to $10 when it's a 4 of in one deck, when Grafdigger's Cage shuts that deck down and can go in any deck?
It doesn't shut down Storm.
Yeah, they can't cast cards in graveyards.
So what, they just use the Pyromancer's Ascension and just activate that and just go right over your head?
Yeah, but, like, it shuts half of, you know, their strategy down. Like, they have to board out Past in Flames.
It's also great against Pod.
Yeah, they could just play...
turn. If it buys you a turn, Marcel. I know that you've played the Storm deck more than me, but I'm saying, like, it...
I'm saying if you side this in against the Storm deck, you're losing. Like, this is an actively bad card against Storm, because they have, let's look at the Warrens, the Goblins.
I mean, even outside of Storm, though, like, the card in general is just very good.
Because people are playing more graveyard strategies now, because you didn't need Grafdigger's Cage before because you had Deathrite Shaman.
No, the card's good. Yeah, no, the card's good. I'm not saying the card's bad.
Okay, it's getting played a lot more.
It's also really good against Pod, because it stops them from potting.
Exactly.
Yeah, they can't play cards in libraries either. So, yeah, I mean, Grafdigger's Cage is just really solid. And it's near its all-time low in paper, and its all-time high on Moto. Like, this is a snap call for me. I mean, I'll definitely defer to you on the whole Storm issue. I think it's a good card against Storm, but you play Storm and you don't, so it's probably good in the other matchups. Like, we're seeing people start to experiment with Vengevine and Bloodghast and stuff like that. Like, and it's already good against established decks, so.
In Storm, I like Aethersworn Canonist as a hate card. Right now, it's like $5 in paper, but online, it's like going $1. It shot up to $1. And that's a decent card. Even though in Storm they do have Lightning Bolt, they could sideboard in. But if they don't sideboard in those Lightning Bolts, that basically just shuts down the Storm deck, like, hard. So, if, you know, and the Death and Taxes card, I think, like, there's a modern Death and Taxes deck that can actually be viable now. So I think that's something that people may want to look into, you know, and it has the Mind Sensor, you're playing with the Ghost Quarters and taking out lands. But that Canonist, yeah, that shuts down Storm deck, as well as Rule of Law. Speaking of Storm, I'm glad that it didn't do well at GP Richmond, you know, the fact that it didn't do well, oh, is it GP Richmond, or what was that?
Yeah,
it was Richmond. Yeah, so yeah, we had GP Richmond, and it didn't do that well. There's 4,300 people there, it didn't beat Vegas, yay. But, yeah, Storm didn't do well, it did top 8, but it did decent there. So people were hating out Storm. If you have Rule of Law, you could hate out Storm. Rest in Peace really pulls the pants down on Storm, so. It seems that, you know, Storm is a beatable strategy if people are able to have a sideboard against it if they're expected in the meta. So I think that we won't see Storm getting banned on the next banned and restricted. I think Storm will be around. I think that is a healthy part of the format. So that's
we need a ban?
The fact you could get a turn 3 kill very reliably. Like, it's not like guaranteed, but like I can look at a hand and pretty much be like, this is going to go off on turn 3. You know, fairly decently. Like, I see turn threes. If I play 10 games, I will turn 3 kill maybe 6 to 7 of the matches.
So how do you reconcile that with the fact that the deck did poorly in GP Richmond, which is the largest modern tournament to date?
Because people were gunning for it, because people said that Storm was the strongest card coming out of the PT, or one of the strongest decks that did the best out of the PT. It's easy to hate out. Rule of Law.
So is this going
to
be another Dredge deck where, like,
yes.
It does really well when no one's expecting it, and then it falls off because of all the hate.
Yes.
And then, like, you pick it back up again, and it cycles like that. Because that, I think that's an interesting feature of Legacy, and I would like to see something like that in Modern.
I think they're going for that in Modern. They want to have that in Modern, and I think they kind of got to the place where it's balanced. And basically, because Storm didn't do well at Richmond, makes me think that Storm is playing that role as a Dredge deck, that you're able to hate it out reliably. The deck could be hated out, but if it's not hated out, it could just bust down the door. So it's a healthy part of the format. That's what I'm saying.
Now, what about another combo deck that's making card prices go insane? I think Ruben Bresler was like 801 or something ridiculous day one with the ad nauseum Angel's Grace deck. So we've seen cards. Somebody bought out ad nauseum and went on Reddit and said, hey, they're $8 now, because they probably listed theirs for $8 on TCG Player. It's back to like $455. But it's up from the $3 it was. I think it was sold out on Star City at $3, and I want to say they restocked higher than that. Phyrexian Unlife is creeping up. There's movement possibility on Angel's Grace, despite it having been printed in Modern Masters. You got Simeon Spirit Guide. You've got Lotus Bloom. Like, what do we see? Is this deck a flash in the pan, or are these price spikes associated with this deck going to be sustainable?
The biggest thing with it is, I think these prices, because there's so many people getting into Modern, even if a card gets hyped up, because there's people that still want to play that deck, and there's so many new people coming into the format, I mean, it's obvious with Richmond. Like, Modern is a real thing. Anyone who's been trying to deny it, living that hole for the past 2 years, can no longer deny it. Modern is a real format. Because there's so many more people wanting to pick those cards up, I think they're just going to hold that value, because people are going, oh shoot, I've got to get mine. And they're just going to start paying that number for it, which means that's the new number. Like, I don't see this stuff really decaying. And some things, like, make sense. Like, especially something like Simeon Spirit Guide. Like, that card to me should have been more expensive throughout the years.
Well, you're just saying that because you play that stupid Spanish Inquisition deck.
I mean, it's not even just that. Just combo in general. There's always times when Simeon Spirit Guide comes up in relevant conversation when you're playing a combo deck. Even in Legacy, it's just, it will always be an eternal playable card. I mean, Elvish Spirit Guide is the test of time. Like, those kind of cards are just good cards. And it surprised me that was always on the buy list for, you know, a quarter, meaning the retail was under $1.
Yeah, I mean, that didn't super make sense to me either, you know. So, yeah, I can dig it. But what do you think about something like Ad Nauseam, where, like, the only play it was getting was as a one of in Legacy? Like, does it being a four of even come close to beginning to justify the price spike?
I mean, maybe it's because we are just talking about combo cards, but, like, now that's the second card that I have to feel like that card's just been too cheap for too long anyway. I mean, I always wondered why Ad Nauseam was pretty much a bulk rare for the longest time anyway. And I think it should have been, even without the modern play, that card's seen enough Legacy action over the years. There's no reason that shouldn't have been a $5 card.
But it was only a one of.
But at first it wasn't. I mean, there were versions of the deck long before this that were playing multiple copies, and it was still not worth it. The card just never went up. And it's one of those cards that everyone knows it's played, and everyone assumes it's worth something. And a lot of times that was with the kind of cards you could trade out for $3 or $4 or $5. And people, that was just the price they assumed it had to be because it was getting played. And, you know, that's realistically a dollar or two. I remember trading many of those away, people assuming that they were worth more, and me having to either correct them or, you know, figure out some way to make it even, just because you can't, I don't know, like, it's one of those perceived value cards. And I think that people are finally just realizing that that's the new value on it. And it's kind of catching up with where people thought it would be all along anyway. I don't think most people are going to be angry that when they go pick up an ad nauseum, it's $5. I know I certainly wouldn't be as a player.
Well, okay, Phyrexian Unlife then, because that has way fewer utilities, and it's basically just the card in that one deck, you know. What about a card like that then, that has less of a case to be made for it?
I mean, it's another one of those things, like somebody mentioned earlier, that they play it in their commander deck. I don't remember which one of you guys it was, but I mean, that card's always had some form of interest. And yes, the fact that it's seeing modern play certainly gave it that initial spike. I don't know that the card's going to have as a $4 or $5 card. It could be a $2 or $3 card, but it cements itself above bulk at the very least, meaning it will never drop back down to bulk.
So are you staying out of this one, I guess? Are you a buyer of Phyrexian Unlife, or are you somebody who wants to be selling
or
staying out?
Oh, no. I mean, I don't know if I've made this completely clear on the podcast yet, but I've tried to with my articles lately. I am completely dissolving myself of modern. I have no interest. If I see something like Stony Silence, I'm going to buy in, but I'm not trying to watch for an event, look for the cards that are spiking that weekend, and go and try and buy them out and participate with the Sheeple and stuff like that. Like, I have no interest in playing that game. If I have a card when it spikes, great. If I don't, oh darn, I'm not going to go chasing them and go back and forth. Like, there's too much moving around in modern right now for me to even want to mess with it. I'd rather concentrate on the casual cards, which is why cards like Phyrexian Unlife were great anyway, because there's a number of casual cards that don't seem great until you see those corner cases. And then suddenly, you know, the card becomes $8 when you were picking up all the whole time at a quarter because you knew they were going to be a dollar or two. So I have no problem with any of these cards spiking as far as modern goes. Like, the people are going to pay whatever price they're going to pay. If people think the price is inflated, then wait a few weeks. If the price doesn't go down, that probably means clearly that the market there was enough demand to keep the card at that price so that that's just the new price for it. If it goes down, it goes down. We've seen that. Look at the fairy stuff. A lot of that started to drop. It's not as low as it should be, I don't think, but the market's correcting itself.
I don't think anyone's in a real hurry that bought a bunch of Bitter Blossoms as a spec. I don't think they're going to be fire sailing them just to break even now. I think they're going to hold out for some value. So that's why prices are sticky when you have individual people with the whole sunken costs fallacy, not wanting to cash right out. So
that's another way of the market readjusting and kind of just showing that Magic within itself has the ability to govern itself. If people want to sit on those copies of Bitter Blossom for X amount of years until they're going to get their value back, yes, Bitter Blossom overall will gain value quicker because that means there's X amount of copies that aren't circulating on the market at that point. But at the same time, if those people, you know, there's going to be some people who go, whatever, I lost a couple of bucks each, or I broke even, I'm just going to get out. And so the more people that are doing that, the longer it's going to take. So it really just comes down to how many people are willing to sit on those cards versus the people who are just trying to, you know, make quick market moves. And the quick market moves are really what's hurting most people now. So I think you're going to see a lot less of that over the coming months, coming years, just because a lot of people are getting burned on it. Like, that's great. The first guy who's in, we've talked about this, first guy who's in makes quite a bit of money, assuming he can, you know, get them out in time. But those third, fourth waves that come through, they're just losing money most of the time. And people are going to learn over time not to buy into that kind of stuff. Like, if you think a card is too expensive, and you can't see why it's that expensive, give it a few months. If you really absolutely need it for that weekend, see if you can borrow a copy. Or, you know, go ahead and pick it up and just sell it while it's still under the hype right that weekend, or whatever you have to do. There's ways to mitigate your costs if you really have to play it. But if it's not something you have to pick up immediately, just wait. Because it's probably not going to spike again immediately. And if it does, that means it's probably worth the new price.
So is Ruined Halo worth the $14 price now that it's at?
No, I don't believe so. I think that's the perfect example of a card. Like, I like Ruined Halo a lot. That was a card where I was advocating it at $7 or $8. You know, somewhere in the 5 to 10 range, I would have no problem with it. I think once it broke that $10 barrier for me, it has to show more than what it has, but at the same time, it has the plus side going for it that it's from a really hard to find set. That entire block of Lorwyn has just continued to show, you know, gem after gem. that's come out and people are, you know, looking at it and going, well, this past card or this other card that came for that set was this much because of how hard it is to find. Well, this one should be this new price. And not realizing that it's not completely based on availability factors. A lot of it's just how many people actually want to play the deck that has that card in it. And some of these are going to hold a little better than others, even though they're from the same set or the same block, just because their deck is more popular at the time of the initial spike. And I don't think it necessarily matters as much down the road how playable the deck is so much as right at that point, because that's when your price itself is setting.
Yeah. That white prison deck does look pretty sweet, though.
Right. I just think it's something, in order to hold that value, you're going to have to see some real results from it here in the next month or two. Otherwise, it's going to drop right back down. And that's the great thing about the market, is it's going to correct itself. It has been since all of these spikes have been happening. There's been just as many cards that are slowly, you know, working their way back down. And yeah, more and more cards spike every day. But just as many of those, you know, cards that had spiked beforehand are starting their, you know, slow grind back down, or else just stagnating at their new price. And that's how you can kind of tell, you know, this card's for real, because it hasn't moved at all in the past 3 weeks. You know, it's not like, I guess the easiest way to explain it and what really made me realize that kind of stuff is when I got selling on TCG Player. And I mean, Jason can attest to this too. You go to put an item up and somebody has it up, so you put it a penny cheaper. Well, if there's no demand for it, you're going to have so many people listing them. That, yeah, a penny doesn't seem like much, but you get 100, 200 people listing them in a week, and suddenly, you know, the price is down $3 or $4. As opposed to, if the demand is there, as quickly as people can put them up, they should be being bought out, meaning that price will stay at a stagnant rate. So, I think that, TCG Player opening up publicly actually was a major push and, factor in both, you know, these buyouts happening in the first place, but also in the fact that they can correct themselves because of that market.
But like, the TCG Player is so easy to buy out though. That's a problem that's associated with. If there are 40 copies on TCG Player and they're all $2, you spend $80 and then you're like, oh, these are 10. And now you have $400 because you spent 80. Like, it's ridiculous how easy it is. And instead of the other site saying, we've had this card for $2 and we're always going to have it for $2, they see it's $10 on TCG Player and they're like, well, what the hell? It's $10 now. And modern players aren't saying, oh, screw that, there's no way I'm paying $10 for this. They're like, oh, I guess this is $10 now. Grumble, grumble, greedy speculators. So, I mean,
you can
what
say
we're
greedy speculators all they want, but if they're willing to pay that $10 price tag, then it wasn't completely driven on speculation.
I think because they
speculation,
think they
have to. Yeah, speculation assumes that the commonly accepted, what I believe people are, you know, when they say grumble, grumble speculation, they're associating that with, oh, this card got heavily inflated and just isn't worth that much. But isn't the fact that you're willing to pay that much for the card in the first place just to play that deck give some merit to the fact that that card went up? I mean, if people, plain and simple,
if they're
people
demonstrating
weren't,
that they'll pay at post-spike prices, right, then I think they're demonstrating that every card is underpriced and every card is due for a higher
right
price.
And you're going to have some people that, you know, are willing to pay the price just because they have to have it for a tournament, but that's not going to make up enough of the people to move something like TCG after a spike. Like, there's going to be people who are relisting their copies, yes, at the new price, and you'll have some people going, you know what, I want to sell mine now. I'm one of those guys. When something like Norrin the Wary spiked, I put mine up 50 cents to a dollar cheaper than everybody else because I wanted them gone right then. I don't want to play that market game. And you're going to have those kind of guys that I'm part of that readjustment. There's a number of people who are going to, you know, put theirs up there for quite a bit less than the other people. And that's not bad for the market either, because if the demand is truly there, those copies will get sucked right up. And I'm okay with that because I make my initial profit. I don't have to worry about them sitting there for 2 weeks, somebody else undercutting me because everyone's trying to put theirs up right at that same moment. And at the same time, if the demand isn't there, then suddenly you just chop down 50 cents off of what the next person's going to put theirs up for, making that, you know, slow demise of the card's price even quicker.
So something you can do as a buyer, as a player, as a non-primarily financier to make sure that you're not paying too much, if a store, like say Star City, raises their sell price, check to see if they raise their buy price too. If they raise their sales price, they're just trying to keep in line with TCG Players so their copies don't get bought out, you know, for cheaper just because they're priced wrong. They'll put their copies for about what Star City has them, or more sometimes, and they'll sell out of them happily. But if their buy price doesn't go up, they don't want more copies because they know that the price is going to come back down and they'll get them for cheaper later. So if the spread starts really increasing along with the price, that means there's a really low dealer confidence and you don't want to be picking them up at that price. So I think if you see the buy price go up because the card's really hot and there's sustained demand, that's that dealer betting money that the card will go up if they, you know, raise their buy price.
Yeah,
but if
absolutely
they're just trying to blow out of their copies, then I would stay away.
And I mean, in some sense, that dealer raising their buy price is no different than us speculating on a card in the first place. like, from a dealer's perspective, you really have to look at cards, you know. When the retail goes up, you have to look at it and go, okay, you know, we're obviously not going to pay more than a percentage of our retail for it, but how much close up to that percentage do we pay? Because, you know, cards you really want, you're willing to pay 70% on it, or, you know, slightly more even sometimes, as opposed to the cards where you're
paying 120% sometimes. Like, their dealers paying 120% of TCG players sometimes, just because it's a, like, arbitrage opportunities like that exist.
Oh, I'm not just talking about against TCG player. I'm just saying, as a retailer themselves, they go, okay, this is my new retail price, but, you know, your buy price is essentially no different than us as speculators saying, you know, what do we want to buy into a card at? And retailers have that same decision to make. So these are people who have been in the business, know what they're doing, have stable business, you know, minds when it comes to Magic. And if they're not willing to raise their price on it, like you said, Jason, I think that that's a good indicator to people to go, maybe I should reevaluate that card. Is it really going to be worth that much?
So was the buy price of Bitter Blossom raised when the new event deck was released? They announced the new event deck, and it doesn't look like we're going to have a Bitter Blossom reprint there.
No?
Did you hear about this?
You have a whole deck list?
No, they had at the bottom. Here, let me give you guys a show. Basically, someone took a copy of the bottom of the deck box, and the bottom of the deck box talks about some of the contents of the cards.
Oh, wait, we knew that. I think Aaron Forsyth said that was some sort of mock-up, and it didn't necessarily reflect the contents of the finished deck or something like that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say that Forsyth said something. Sorry, Mr. Forsyth said something on Twitter.
Yeah,
like, I don't know if he was equivocating, but...
So basically it said there's going to be Elspeth 2.0, the one that was reprinted in Modern Masters, along with Hero of the Bladehold, Intangible Virtue, and Honor of the Peer.
So we're getting probably Soldiers and 1-1 Flyers as the double-sided token. 1-1 Flyers probably from Spectral Procession and probably Lingering Souls.
Lingering Souls, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're just going to try and – they're going to – man, they're really trying to nerf that Elspeth price. I thought it was pretty good that she recovered around 14, 15. This last time around, getting it back to 20 at one point.
Feral or Night Errant?
It's Night Errant.
Again, after Modern Masters. Yeah. Like, what's the point? Like, yeah. So now you're saying that this is, could not be it. If it's not
and it's
it.
Not even, it's not even, like, I don't get it. That's not even a heavily modern play card. Like, I don't ever hear anybody going, man, I can't find myself an Elspeth. I see those all the time. I mean,
they're going for nerfing the price. I think they just want something that people can buy.
But what I'm saying is, like, that card isn't, even, like, why are you structuring one of your main mythics in your deck around something that doesn't need to be reprinted? Like, I don't even know that black-white tokens is the way I would have gone with this deck. I don't see any of the cards that they've presented to me so far outside of the potential of Marsh Flats, obviously, that I look at and go, man, yep, that needed a price readjustment. That, or I mean, we look at it as a price readjustment, but just an availability issue in general.
I think they're going more for just something that you can open and play reasonably immediately in a modern event more than card availability. I think they're just going for getting people into the format at a relatively low barrier, even if it's not optimal.
I think if they're not going for card availability, I think they're doing it wrong. Like, we're seeing what's happening with modern, and we see that prices are just insane, and they need to have some release valves. This event deck needs to be a release valve. If they don't have Bitter Blossom, if they got a black white token and they don't have Bitter Blossom, that's a complete fail, I think, personally.
Well, who knows when they designed this deck if, like, Bitter Blossom had even been on ban then.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the whole point. That's why I think that Bitter Blossom is not in the deck, and it says it has Honor of the Pure. Bitter Blossom doesn't, Honor of the Pure doesn't pump Bitter Blossom tokens. So, I think that if this deck is real, that, yeah, they designed it before Bitter Blossom was considered unbanned, and even then, it's still a complete failure.
It's not $80 for Elspeth, though. There's a Marsh Flats in there, or I will... No, I'm not gonna say I'm gonna eat a hat or anything, but, like, I'll be surprised, and I'll say on the podcast, wow, that's surprising. How about that?
If it's Marsh Flats, that's just bad, and that's not the card that needs to be reprinted. And,
yeah, like, not reprinting all five of that. Yeah.
They need to reprint all of
them. I feel like if you were gonna do this, the way to go, like, if you want to do something that's just, like, moderately mid-range playable, but at the same time gives you the availability to reprint some cards, you can even get cards that don't need to be reprinted, like Knight of the Reliquary, and they're just for flavor. But do something like a Naya or a green-white midrange where you can make an excuse to put two or three different fetches in there as one-offs. And I just don't see why they had to go with black-white, which has no cards, really. Like I said, even Marsh Flats is just kind of all the fetches, that's the one you're going to reprint right away? Like, that's the one that needs it the least, probably. I'd rather see Aerith over that.
What would be the Heath, then, or whatever, that black fetid Heath? you think it's something like that? Like, it's kind of.
I mean, it's probably going to be. It's probably. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're going to slam four Marsh Flats and four Fetid Heats in it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's like a 2-in-1 or a 1-in-1 or something like that. I mean, the biggest problem is this is supposed to be something you're supposed to be able to take to a modern event, meaning it has to be for consistency. Like, I don't see them only wanting to put one Marsh Flats in. And, you know, I understand they don't want to tank the price. Well, they don't care for the price, but they don't want to, you know, oversell the market on them. But at the same time, can we expect 2 or 3 or possibly even 4 of one of these big name rares that's going to sell the deck?
Well, I mean, and does this deck have to be good? Because if they want people to go into modern, you know, tournaments with this deck, it's a turn 4 format. You see where it's at right now. And if you got a deck that's just dirtling around, like, you know, is this really achieving this purpose?
Yeah, another thing to note too, I wouldn't be surprised to see this deck playing Thassa's. So be prepared for that. I'm not saying Thassa's is going to take a huge hit because it's already pretty well down there and I don't think it really is much slower it can actually go for the point where somebody just decides they actually want to buy them all out. I mean, it's certainly a potential reprint, which would definitely stifle the growth of that card. Because, I mean, that's the only way you're going to be able to give a deck like that feasibly a chance in this current format is to pack it with some discard as well. And again, I mean, the biggest problem is any card that you would want to reprint, you know, I understand you put a $75 price tag on it, which means that we're expecting some cards, but at the same time, I don't think anybody's expecting, you know, $400, $500 worth of cards. So unless they're willing to do that, I don't see how they're going to make a modern playable deck in and of itself without, you know, just essentially reprinting this deck to say, here's Marsh Flats as a one of. The deck sucks. Here you go.
Well, there you go. So that's that. We'll find out more when we get the actual deck list and there's less speculation, but that's our thoughts on that. So Scott, so anything more about this Blues Cube 2.0 you want to let people know about it so that people get out there, they can find it, you know, they want to play it, anything you want to let them know?
I guess the biggest thing that I see a lot of misconceptions about, quick rules clarification, which is also on the rules cards, taking a shot or chugging a beer does not count as drinking for purposes of triggering stuff. I get that question all the time, so let me just be very clear. Taking shots or chugging beers is not drinking, for purposes of the rules, at least.
And for the purposes of my parole. Thanks, loophole.
But, yeah, you can find, so the new Booze Cube, the new version 2.0, is it about triples the size of it, at least. Maybe even quadruples. I can't remember how many cards I released in the original, but it adds a ton of stuff that the Booze Cube needed before. It adds a lot of removal. It adds a lot of support for the various tribes. The Frat Boy tribe in white, the Pirate tribe in blue, the Dwarf tribe in red. It adds a lot of support for various archetypes, for the an artifact deck, for tokens, for, Reanimator. It adds a whole lot more depth. It adds a lot more mana fixing. It just adds a lot of everything, and in addition to just new mechanics and new cards. And thanks to Marcel, I actually managed to register the boozecube.com. I just haven't switched everything over yet. But if you Google it, you'll find the blog with the visual spoiler and the print sheet. And yeah, download it. Try it out. I've got my list up on the site in a spreadsheet. And, you know, feel free to use whatever you need. It's just out there as a cube. I envision it as something that, you know, real regular cubes, you rotate cards in and out. I'm sure, you know, if there's cards that I want to replace or get sick of, I'll take them out and put new stuff in. And people should feel free to do the same.
Definitely. Play the game. Do not play it if you're under 21. Do not condone that. On this podcast.
Yeah, don't drink and drive, because that's just fucking stupid.
This is a game.
Don't throw up on the cards.
Yes, that's happened.
Have you laminated your cards? I heard there was talk about that.
I haven't. I basically printed out on printer paper and glued them to basic lands, because it is the cube most likely to be puked on. I've foiled out a few cards, and I'm slowly foiling out more things, but I definitely play them in good sleeves, because then the puke washes off easily. But, yeah, I've been constantly changing the cards around for the last year, so they haven't been in quite a fixed form until fairly recently.
So for the Booze Cube, you're going to be there for the Drunk Train, GP Montreal. We're going to stream this on Brewski Bistro. That's BrewskiBistro on Twitch. We'll be streaming the Drunk Train. We'll be streaming the Brews Cube Championship at whoever's hotel room we're going to be doing that at, or maybe even at the event if we don't get caught. That's not happening. We're going to be doing it off-site for sure. And, yeah, you can check that out, the Brews Cube. And while you're at it, if you're going to be in Montreal, there's going to be a party. You can check out Monitor Pride. They'll give you all the information called the Grand Prix Montreal Party. Spruik's going to be spinning there. This is going to be, I believe, at the W Hotel. You can find all the directions there. Let me see if I can go to monitordeprive.com. You can find it
in the show notes. Yeah, this party is today, so.
It comes out, what, Friday? This comes out Thursday night, so people are going to listen to this on Friday morning, and the actual party is going to be Saturday night. So get there Saturday, and they want people dressed and pressed, I guess. Really?
No backpacks.
There you go. Oh, please leave your hats and sneakers at home. Sorry, guys. So check it out. You're going to see us there. Brainstorm Brewery, Heavy Meta, the A-Team. We're going to do it live. GP Montreal. Anything else out? You guys want to get out there to the people? Brian, Jason?
I apologize for the quality of this episode.
I think we're all just stressed / excited for Montreal.
Yep, that's it. And there we go.
Stress-sided.
Check us out next week, I believe, after we come back from GP Montreal with a lot less energy.
Maybe we'll have Corbin.
Oh, Corbin. We forgot. No Corbin this episode.
Oh, wow. We didn't even make fun of him. I leave for a week, and I get verbally destroyed. And Corbin leaves, and that's what it is. It was quiet. That's why this week felt weird. It's like there was a ghost in the room the whole time.
But last week, it was very apparent that the talent was...
Yeah, we had a good episode.
Skewered!
Shout out.
We should just delete all of this.
Oh, I just got a quick shout out.
Oh, go ahead.
To Meat Hall Games and themeatery.org. My local game store, very cool store. They're creating a social network. It's basically Facebook for magic. And it's pretty cool, so you should check it out.
Okay. You can find our sometimes writer Jeff Hoogland's articles on the Meatery also.
Yep.
Awesome, check them out. There you go.
Oh, yeah! I'd like to give a shout-out to Corbin, wherever he is. I hope he's safe and not crashing into trees like he likes to do.
Wait, what happened?
You hereby erect his car into a tree.
What? Keep his eye on the road.
Oh, you weren't here for that one.
No.
Yeah, there was like a half inch of snow in Oklahoma, and everybody lost their shit.
Oh, of course.
He got distracted by the ice cream, just ice cream truck that passed by.
I know you're just joking about that, but this seems like a real thing that could have happened. So.
Yeah, he saw ice cream truck on one side, he saw B-dubs on the other side, he didn't know where to look, just crashed in the tree. And there we go, Brainstorm Brewer.
And this, oh, yeah, the heart to make fun of that poor guy while he's not here.
This episode crashed into a tree. But thank you, Scott. Thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
That was fun. Now I'm going to go crash, but not in a tree.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.